everybody. Starting things a little bit earlier, and this time it is again with this. This is Melrose Place. Today's episode is season 3, episode 27, Hoes by Any Other Name. Yes, and here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and... Is there anybody?
Ooh, master of suspense. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I am suspended, indeed.
Thank you, Tara.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Before we get into this episode, we wanted to tell you what is happening on our Patreon. Again with this episode 49 is dropping May 28th. Off a suggestion on our Twitter from @Megonzo, it's going to be, let's watch the Dan Cortez episode of Seinfeld. That's right. It's season 5, episode 12, titled The Stall. You can watch it on Hulu. We will link it in the show notes. And if you want to hear that discussion, you can join us at patreon.com/againwiththis for that episode and the 48 that preceded it. And now, Hoes by Any Other Name. Starting with the D-plot, let's find out what's wrong with Matt's latest boyfriend. You know it's something.
Yay!
At the hospital, Michael chats up the new plastic surgeon, Paul Graham. Michael is, of course, disgusting about all the boob jobs he assumes Paul is going to be doing, but Paul says he doesn't do cosmetic surgery. Clip 2.
My specialty is burns and trauma.
Oh, plenty of both of those on that show and this podcast.
Yeah, just among his wives.
Yeah. Welcome, Paul. So Matt rolls up just then with his stupid hair. You see the visual aids.
It's so stupid.
So bad.
I'm angry.
Mm-hmm. Michael introduces Matt to Paul, by the way, calling Paul our latest nip and tuck man because he's already forgotten Paul's noble specialty. Matt asks about Michael's date situation for some hospital thing. Obviously, Michael is not bringing Kimberly, and Matt replies he's going solo, too. He hasn't seen anyone else since he and Jeffrey split up. And at the mention of a male name, Paul does a fairly subtle double take, but, you know, still a double take.
Mm-hmm.
And when Matt has gone, Paul is like, clip 3.
Is that guy gay?
Yeah, what about it?
Nothing. I'm just not used to seeing somebody so upfront about it.
Is that guy gay? Take it easy, Paul.
Yeah.
In the hospital gym later, which I'm pretty sure is the set that's normally used for Matt's office, but they just brought in some exercise bikes.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Paul offers to spot Matt and then makes small talk about the hassles of moving. He is from Ohio. Seems like there's a vibe, but Paul just says he'll see Matt around before they exchange another furtive look. And the next day, Paul finds Matt in the hall to ask him out to dinner. It's on. And after that date, Matt and Paul walk and flirt. Paul took a risk asking Matt out. He usually doesn't mix work and his personal life. But now he'd like to swing back to Matt's place for a nightcap, and Matt would as well. Post-sex, Matt sleeps while Paul slips out of bed, sneaks out to the phone, and calls a woman.
Long distance from yeah. Someone else's apartment.
She misses him. When's he coming home? I don't think it's long distance. Because she's like, when are you coming home? Like, meeting that night.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Still. Ooh.
Yeah. So he says they just got a 3-car accident in, so probably not for hours. But he loves her. She loves him, too. Oh, Paul. Your secrets.
Never trust a man with 2 first names.
It's a good rule. Moving on to the C-plot. Kimberly completes her survival course in record time. Over to Camp No More Victims, where they're doing hand-to-hand training. Kimberly is once again paired with Dodd, who I would think would have, like, gone home to her abusive relationship after the last time Kimberly tried to murder her. But she didn't. Kimberly waits for Sarge's back to be turned before attacking Dodd, who yells that she's going to regret it. Ladies, for real. Just fuck. But anyway, before Dodd can retaliate, Sarge pulls him apart again and says they're supposed to be cooperating. That's how you learn. Kimberly tries to argue with him, but he shuts her down. And then it's time to learn the forward chokehold. Kimberly volunteers to let Sarge demonstrate with her as the attacker, ending with him knocking her onto the ground gently, by my eye, but she still yelps when she falls. And then it's her turn to defend herself against his attack. And when she does, she knees him super hard in the balls, flattens him on his stomach, and wrenches his arm behind him, breaking it. And then is like, oh, how awful, and sidles off smirking because she does not care.
No, she really doesn't. And hat tip to the sound effects team. Mm-hmm. The Foley art on the disarticulation of the limb was, for a, you know, nighttime soap, pretty good.
Yeah, real loud.
Scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the next day, Kimberly's doing setups alone at camp when Sergeant is cast and the rest of the campers walk up behind her. It seems they have all conferred and agree that Kimberly's already achieved so much at camp NMV that she doesn't need to stay for the full 2 weeks. She can just take off early, like right fucking now. And when she puts a hand on the soldier of the arm she didn't already break to try to argue the point with Sarge, he removes her hand and is like, this is not a negotiation. Get out. And he has everyone applaud her, which they do quite sarcastically. And he joins them as well as he can with, you know, one broken wing. So then some number of days later, Michael's coming down the hall at the hospital when he spots Kimberly in scrubs. He reminds her of their deal where she would quit and stay away forever. But she chirps that she just took a week of sick leave. And when he bitches about the stuff she left at the beach house, she shoots back. She got it that morning and drops her key in his hand, sauntering off. And he demands to know where she's been, but she has no interest in telling him. Clip 4.
I am back permanently.
Not if I have anything to do with it. Enjoy your last few days, babe.
Enjoy yours, Michael.
Oh, fuck.
I mean, anyone else, I'd be like, ew. But the thing is, ew.
Yeah. And his face is kind of like, oh, dear.
This yeah.
is not good for me. And
this
it's not
what happens when you try to fuck a beehive.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck to you.
The next day, Kimberly finds Matt at a table outside the hospital cafeteria and gets rid of whatever guy Matt was dining with so that she can talk to him. Clip 5.
Your narcissism never ceases to amaze me.
Au contraire. Can I get you anything? Coffee, juice, sausage burrito?
Is that homophobic? Ask, coming from her, because she has slammed him in the past. I wonder.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, get to the point. So she claims what she wants is to apologize for how awful she's been to him. He does not believe her. So when she insists that she'll do anything he wants to promote him at the hospital, he's like, why? But she sticks on her regret line and he's like, I'll see what I can do about forgiving her, I guess. She's not asking for anything else at the moment, but this is enough for her to give him a giddy hug.
Yeah, I got a, you know, I'll say whatever so that I can end this conversation and begin hiding from you in earnest in the hallways yeah. vibe.
Yeah, fair. So in her motel room, Kimberly uses an X-Acto knife to cut the eyes out of like dozens and dozens of portraits of Michael, including several doubles, by the way, which you can see in the GIF that
yeah.
I made.
I think there's only 3 total. It was yeah. just like, did she order headshots from uh-huh. the hospital commissary? That was a very weird.
Yeah.
Weird thing.
Work smarter, not harder, I say. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do all the doubles. Just one is fine.
Or stack them all up and then cut all the eyes at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to crazy wall everything for you?
That's a great point.
I'm saying.
On to the B plot. Amanda triumphs over all her foes with help from Brooke. It's morning in the courtyard. The peace is broken by Michael, screaming Amanda's name from the time he's at, like, the mailboxes. And he's holding a piece of paper so we can guess where this is going. Sure enough, she tells him he has to stay 300 feet away from her. He shows what he thinks of her restraining order by tearing it up and throwing the shreds at her, which is kind of ineffective because they're paper. And she yells at him to get lost and is totally unmoved when he claims he saved her life. Clip 6.
No wonder your red count was so off. You don't have blood in your veins. You have snake venom.
At least I'm not the snake.
You'd be 6 feet under if it weren't for me. I should have let you die.
Better luck next time.
Oh, and I promise you, Amanda, there'll be a next time.
Gorgeous.
Sure.
I love you so much, I'm going to definitely murder you. Like, if you're trying to convince her she doesn't need a restraining order, that's not the way, guy.
Yeah, couple notes on that, for sure.
At the office, Allison's on the phone in the bullpen, yelling at someone about work they didn't do to her specs. And when an innocent-seeming Amanda rolls up, Allison lays into her, again, very professionally in the middle of everyone else's desks. Clip 7.
What is with you lately? You have a blatant disregard for detail.
Gold Crest Printing has never made a mistake, Allison. You must have left room for interpretation. And for the record, follow-up was Brooke's responsibility, not mine. Nevertheless, you should have been on it.
I'm sorry, it was my responsibility. Would you excuse us? I can see what you're doing.
4 jobs at once?
You are completely undermining my authority.
And you are insulting and blind. I'm trying to help you. Allison, if you can't see past your own insecurities, you'll never be able to handle this job.
Is that sage advice or wishful thinking?
Both.
Why can't it be both?
I mean,
yeah, I remember, like, she said that line and I was like, that's actually pretty good advice for this situation.
Yeah. So Billy rolls up just then and asks to speak to Allison in her latest very short skirt in her office, where he warns her that if she doesn't relax, the staff is going to mutiny. She whines that she's tired from working 16-hour days for weeks and then lowers her voice to admit the board has said she's on notice and asks him not to tell Amanda. Totally. Billy is great at keeping secrets. We all remember how well he kept Amanda's secret about her cancer.
Mm. Yeah. Like, if he literally physically can't keep his mouth closed. I don't know. Maybe some discretion, but maybe. It's a soap.
He thinks Allison's being paranoid, but she reminds him that some clients have left with others on the fence. And if they don't get Glorious Gowns their layout on time, they'll be fucked for the June bridal magazine. So, just by the way, this episode aired May 1st. They definitely already missed those deadlines.
Like, oh, yeah.
Those issues went to print probably 2 months ago.
Yeah, probably.
So Billy tells Allison to try throwing money at the printer to fix it, which seems not to have occurred to her. She's not good at this job. So she thanks him and gets on the phone. And then we have to go over to Brooke's place, where the lady of the manor and Billy are doing more of their weird kissing in a gigantic bubble bath and drinking champagne because her dad is out of town. She complains that she can't seem to please Allison anymore. And Billy blabs about Allison being on notice with the board. Literally his very next scene. He's just billing it. Who could have seen that shit coming? Everyone. Brooke frowns as if to encourage him to keep talking, and he warns her not to re-blab his blab since Allison told him in confidence. Brooke wants to know exactly what unnoticed means. Apparently, if Allison fucks up one more time, she's out. And Brooke pretends to hope Allison can ride this out because she really deserves the success. And Billy agrees, like, do you? Do you think she deserves the success? Because she's been kind of shitty to you specifically, buddy.
Also, she's bad.
She's real bad.
And she can't, like, the fact that, like, Amanda, I know we talked about this last time. It's like, you better pray you had nothing to do with this. Like, first of all, what? Yeah. Second of all, what? And third of all, she obviously did fire her. But that not having been done, like, there's no resolution on the, we pitched the client his mother's suicide.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like a pretty big deal. Like, if I'm the board, I'm just like, wow, that's like a TBI level fuck up. You gotta go lie down. Never mind working here anymore. Like, you need to be in a dark room. Uh-huh. I just, like, I'm really not clear on how Billy, I understand Billy's role here as a conduit of information, but it's just like, how. This is the only problem with this plot, and what keeps it from being ultimately satisfying is that all of this has been so terrible from the get.
Yeah.
And Allison has been not just incompetent, but also a shit about it.
Yes.
For so long that it's sort of like, this is, you know, not like HR. Like, could someone know? Mm-hmm. We're still doing this. Okay. So yeah.
So the next day, Brooke in her very cheap and tacky color block dress, which you can see in the visual aids, practically trip over her feet, telling Amanda the good bad news about Allison. Mm-hmm. And in the process, Amanda lets Brooke know she's clocked that Brooke and Billy are fucking. So Amanda's move is send duplicates of the glorious gowns spread to a different printer and say they'll pay triple. And Brooke asks, what about Goldcrest? And Amanda tells her not to worry about it. And then hops on the phone to Goldcrest, posing as Allison, and changes the deadline, saying they don't need it for 2 weeks. And the next day, we join Allison on the phone with Goldcrest, looking for her print job and finding out how she personally called earlier to postpone it. And now the soonest they can turn it around is 2 days, and Allison has no choice but to tell them to do it, just as Amanda's walking in behind her. Allison accuses her of the deadline switcheroo, and by way of denial, Amanda's like, are you drinking again? They go on. Clip 8.
No one else had that much to gain, Amanda. I can't believe you were so blatant about sabotaging my career.
I hate to point this out, but you called in the initial job. You alienated Mrs. Molly's cookies. The list is endless. You're screwing up all by yourself.
Oh, come on, Amanda. Walker said somebody called, said they were me, and canceled the job.
Vendors lie to cover their butt, Allison. That's part of this business. Did you get written confirmation that you'd have it back in 2 days?
No.
Cardinal rule number one, always get it in writing.
Great. I'll call Bob McGovern and the board and tell them that.
You call Bob McGovern now, and it's career suicide. Look, call a board meeting, invite McGovern, and tell him there. Blame it on me. Say it was my responsibility. Say anything you have to. The board will back you completely, because in unity there's strength. McGovern will feel safe and won't defect.
I don't trust that coming from you.
Allison, you're drowning, and I'm throwing you a life ring.
You already suspect her. Why are you listening to any of
yeah.
this?
Yeah, why advice? Does she still work there? Why does any of you work there?
Honestly, like, the fact that Allison got this promotion, like, just because she had the most seniority, it seems, is so ridiculous, given that, as I said in the last episode, it was not that long before that she and Billy completely fucked up the cruise line.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, they never mentioned again. It really is like the board was just sitting around and they're like, all right, first credits cast member to walk by. Oh, there she is.
Yeah.
Eventually, Billy has to end up in charge of it, right? Probably.
He's there. Right? I mean, that seems to be the only qualification.
Yeah, seriously. Not for nothing, but can we, since Peter Burns was just mentioned, can we bring back Caitlin? She did seem to know what she was doing.
Please.
And she was very chic as well.
Mm-hmm, she was. And I do think they brought up the cruise line again, like, just in a throwaway line in the episode afterwards, like, thank God we saved that off screen. Like,
they. Oh, yeah, you're right. They did.
Not that
but
it matters.
I mean, no way did they actually do that, because.
Certainly not. So leaving D&D that night, Allison confides that she's planning to can Amanda this week, and then notes that Billy's been really distant lately, and Brooke, her confidant, lies that he does not tell her about his private life and then changes the subject. Allison needs to take a night off. Go to a movie. Get a massage. And Allison asks Brooke to join her since, I guess, she's alienated all her real friends. Like, again... We know that Jane is dealing with her own shit. We also know Joe is pissed at Allison with good reason, but, like, call Jane. Anyway, Brooke would love to, but her dad's waiting in this limo right here. But when she gets in, it's Billy, and she immediately pounces on his face. And the best is that while they're inside, totally, like, furiously making out, Allison is outside, like, bye, just waving obliviously.
Oh, my God, it's so sad. And then inside, it's, like, two of those, you know, the bird drinking toys that with from the Homer disability episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like those two. It's like that is trying to make out with like a novelty snake thing. Like, it's just very weird. Like, it's like they're in two different scenes and Andrew Hsu is completely overmatched.
Yeah.
God bless Kristen Davis. She really is trying to sell it. That she's like, you know, Billy, I can't wait to do it with Billy. Like, That is some acting is what that is. Good for her.
Very true. So the next day, it's time for Allison to, for some reason, take Amanda's advice and eat shit with the board. Clip 9.
Due to unforeseen circumstances, the Glorious Gowns print campaign will be unable to meet its deadline.
No, the campaign does not have will. The campaign is not able to do anything. You were unable to meet the campaign's deadline, idiot.
Yeah. Also, the circumstances were foreseen from space years in advance by children who were as yet unborn when this plot began. So, shut up.
Yeah.
Just fire yourself and leave, please.
She does not. The scene goes on, and this is a long one, but it's important. Clip 10.
I'm sorry. The account was Amanda Woodward's responsibility, and she led me to believe...
Is this an ad agency or a playground?
I only meant...
To shift accountability. I'm going to miss the June bride deadlines.
No, you won't, Mr. McGovern. Allison's right. It was my responsibility. Here are your layouts, camera ready for any magazine format. You set me up. To try to please a client? You're right. Mr. McGovern, you've been trying to get back at me ever since Billy dumped you for me.
Really, Alice?
It's true! From that moment on, I've had to work under a cloud of allegation and innuendo. Allison, you are humiliating all of us. I have tried in earnest to work with this massively incompetent woman. She has neither the respect of the staff nor the faith of the stockholders. Now, I know you all have questions about my health, but I can assure you, my health is excellent. Mr. Chairman, I either leave D&D and take my accounts with me, or I stay as president.
This is outrageous.
So is the fact that Goldcrest Printing gave Allison a discount, but she failed to pass it on to the client.
She's lying! What's going on here? I have taken this company
and sent it into a downward spiral.
The only mistake I ever made was not firing you, you conniving bleach blonde piece of dirt!
Ladies, please! It's enough. President Woodward, it's your call. But do us all a favor, will you? Err on the side of professionalism.
You're demoted. But since you gave Brooke your old position, there's no place left for you. Consider this 2 weeks' notice.
And you just wait a minute. There's always room for someone with talent.
What does that have to do with Allison?
Yeah, ba-doom-tsh. I mean... I said it wasn't completely satisfying, but it was pretty fucking satisfying.
It's pretty good. It's
And in our visual aids, there's a reaction shot from the Glorious Gowns client, like watching this all go down, where he absolutely looks like claymation levels of horrified that this is happening. And I was like, look, it's getting messy, but Amanda saved it for you. So sit back, get some popcorn, enjoy the show.
Yep. Anyway, to Billy's, there's always room for someone with talent. Allison is like, no, there's not, and leaves. And this would be the perfect moment for man to be like, thanks for my job back. You've been served for fire me in the first place for having cancer. But she doesn't.
Yeah.
And Brooke goes running after Allison, claiming she couldn't possibly stay and work for Amanda after what she did. But Allison bravely tells her to stay. Allison will be fine. Smash cut to Amanda popping champagne in her office for her and Brooke to celebrate Alice's ouster. And that is honestly maybe the most satisfying part of all.
Mm. Yeah. And also Brooke plays that once again, right on the knife edge, could go either way. I think she's like assuming Allison's going to be like, no, 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 keep your job.
Yeah. Which she does.
Which, of course, she does, even if she actually wants Brooke to quit, which she probably does. Mm-hmm. And once again, the random volumes of Shakespeare and Dickens that are in an ad executive's office return to their rightful owner, never Indeed. To be read by anyone.
That and the weird mirror behind the screen for Amanda to change sometimes. Mm,
sure.
Finally, we have our A plot. Sydney fucks up both professionally and personally.
Oh, boy.
After some of the exact same Melrose Avenue B-roll I gift literally 3 episodes ago, We follow Joe back to Jake's place where she's looking for Jess, who immediately kisses her. She does a gorgeous guilty look. You can see in the visual aids where it's like...
And mouth wipe.
Uh-huh. Well done. It's like silent movie reaction levels.
It sure
of,
is.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. It's great.
So she freaks out and hisses, "Where's Jake?" at him, but Jake's in the shower and Jess feels free to kiss on Joe some more, but she backs away and says she feels guilty. She has nothing to be guilty about, he says. And then Jake comes out of the shower in a towel and no one is mad. And Joe practically springs away from Jess to greet Jake. She claims she just came by to tell him she got some job he knew that she'd interviewed for and he's happy to hear it and offers to make coffee once he's dressed. What's your hurry? But her photo shoot's in an hour, which means she should have left 2 hours ago. That's me saying it, not her. Jake doesn't seem to notice that she's nervous as a cat, but after she's left, he does give Jess a bit of a suspicious glare. So then Sydney in her kicky little business suit struts up to Michael at his locker at the hospital and tells him about bailing out Jane's business with his money. She thinks they should get together and push Jane out. And I'm obviously in favor of getting rid of Jane, but it's an apparel company and she's the designer. Like, I know Sydney keeps saying she has lots of ideas and we've seen her do piecework at the studio, but like the idea that she will be the new Jane, I don't see it.
I mean, yeah, I don't either. But since Jane apparently is not going to be written off the show, I guess this isn't really something we have to worry about in a question mark. And also, well, whatever. You'll see in the next ons.
Indeed. So Michael's not interested, although he is suspicious about why Sydney is approaching him about this. And she hilariously says she's a tiny bit remorseful about blackmailing him for the second time. This show is
love
perfect.
It.
He begs her to let him get back to his impoverished, miserable life, so she offers to cheer him up by cooking for him at the beach house that night, and he sadly agrees. And at their date at the beach house, she pours champagne for him and comments that she loves this house, and he tells her he can't pay the rent on his own. She suggests that he try to work out a deal with the landlord, but Michael says if she loves the place so much, she should pay the rent. And she says she will if she gets what she wants. And he asks what that might be, closing up the space between them. And she says this, clip 11.
Don't be dense.
Me? I don't think so.
You don't want the money.
I don't believe you, Sid.
Just think of it as our own little fair trade agreement. Unless, of course, you'd rather live in a one-room hovel.
You got yourself a deal.
Call it an understanding.
Well, call it whatever you want. Let's just get it over with.
I love that you can hear his belt buckle.
The belt clanking, I know. Yeah, let's just get it over with. Like, okay, Brooklyn, don't pretend you're not turned on.
Honestly, she's hot as shit.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Also, you're lucky it hasn't occurred to her that you should move into her rundown shithole at Melrose while she stays in the beach apartment, so or beach house. So just, you know, learn to behave, as someone's about to tell you.
Meanwhile, at Shooters, Jane and Joe are catching each other up on what's going on with Jane's failing business and Joe's hot sex with Jess. Though she withholds his name, indicating him with a flick of her chin, and Jane agrees with Joe she should keep their relationship secret as long as she can. And after sex, Sydney's celebrating their return to her and Michael's good old days, but Michael reminds her that they weren't very happy then. She disagrees, and he's like, "Whatever you say, moneybags," basically. And true to her word, she gets out of bed and writes him a check. Clip 12.
You better learn to behave yourself. Keep you on the payroll on a month-to-month basis. As long as I get what I want, when I want it.
Hot. Sorry.
I mean, efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Direct.
Yeah.
Regulate this. Protect sex workers. It's work.
Indeed.
And PSA.
At the studio the next day, Jane is not on board with one of her president's recent moves. Clip 13.
You put Michael on our payroll? Sydney, are you nuts? Michael broke up with Kimberly.
Kimberly was paying half the rent on the beach house. Michael can't afford it on his own.
Why is it our problem if Michael can't pay his rent?
I don't have time to talk about this right now. I've got a business meeting.
You have a business meeting? About what?
I've been approached business, about something business. And my instincts told me to listen.
Fine, then I'm going with you.
No, you're not, Jane. You have a knack for turning fortune into poverty. I promise I'll give you a full report.
I mean, she's not wrong.
She's not. Really not. So then Sydney goes to her lunch meeting with Vincent Connell and Jim Stone, where we learn she's going by Mrs. Mancini again. So it turns out these dudes have a source on cheap nylons from China, but they need to sell them under a designer front company, label. She'll get her money whether they sell or not. They're going to pay her $100,000 for the right to use the name, plus 50 cents per package. Clip 14.
Wait a minute. $100,000 for pantyhose. Just pantyhose.
Sydney, we came to you because we figured you knew enough about these things not to ask questions. After all, you did work for Lauren.
Go to hell.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Relax, relax. I'm sorry. What I meant to say was, you've got smarts, right?
So what's the catch?
Let's just say they're slightly irregular.
And it is a lot of money.
For doing nothing.
60 cents per package. And $125,000.
You drive a hard bargain there. Except.
Seems like this is all in the up and up to me. Nothing
yeah,
to worry
this
about.
This is great. Also, there's no such thing as a mafia. What could possibly go wrong?
So that night, Sydney's coming through the courtyard just in time to see Jess knock on Joe's door. Joe's in the middle of making prints and tries to excuse herself to go put on some makeup. Oh, my God. He's already seen you. Patriarchy is a prison. Jesus.
Really?
But he assures her that she looks great, which she does. Clip 15.
I guess I should spill my guts before I lose my nerve.
Why? What's up?
I saw how uncomfortable you were with Jake this morning, and I feel responsible. I mean, I feel lousy about
Mm-mm,
it.
That was the situation. That wasn't you.
I appreciate you saying that. But I saw you two in Ellensburg.
You saw a friend being supportive of another friend in a time of need.
No. I saw a connection between two people, and then I come along and throw a major wrench into it. It's wrong.
Jess, you even saying that means a lot to me, but... I mean, things would be difficult with Jake no matter who came into my life. Oh, my God, my prince.
Do you have any idea how crazy I am about you? I would never cause you even a minute's pain. I just wanted to tell you that.
Creepy.
I gotta go.
No, don't.
So then they kiss. Bitch, you're prince. But
that's all I could think about. That and how well and carefully they're laying this. He's like, it's too much.
Yep.
Gift of fear stuff. Like they're doing a good job with that.
Yep, I agree. So Jess pushes Joe up against the wall again. And on the other side at her place, Sydney can hear them going at it all the way in the kitchen. But then... she does get closer to the wall to eavesdrop better, which whomst among us. And the next day, Sydney goes to see Jake, who totally cuts her dead for quitting without giving him any notice. When he tries to get rid of her, she narcs on Joe and Jess. And she's barely gotten the whole snitch out before Jake has stormed out and over to Joe's place to yell at her, even though she keeps saying, I have to get to work. And he keeps ignoring her, literally ordering her to sit and absorb his attack, which for some reason she does instead of telling him to fuck off. Clip 16.
Wait, tell me the truth. Wait, you hate my guts for some secret reason? So you sleep with my brother out of revenge?
Who told you?
So it's true.
Look, Jake, the last time we were together, you said you didn't want a commitment.
So what, my brother's the next best thing? If you wanted a man in your bed, Joe, you could have called me. I'd have helped you out.
I know you're hurting. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. What's the problem? You don't want me. No one else can have me either.
You're talking about my brother.
And there are real feelings there, Jake.
Oh, you have real feelings for a total loser.
He is not
a loser.
All right, you want to believe it's real, you knock yourself out. I'm not buying it.
It's worth noting, and this is in the visual aids, in addition to his usual XXXXL khakis he is wearing, a plaid button-down that even when his arms are raised in full Dawson Leary flap while he's screaming at Joe,
yeah,
the hem of the shirt still hits at mid-thigh. This is like, even David Silver would be like, too long. Like, what? I know when it was. I remember this time. I just, how, why are they hiding Grant Show under a bushel of fabric?
Yes.
It's so sad. Anyway, it's in the visual aids. Quote, enjoy, end quote.
I mean, we should say, we also, there's images of him, you know, in a towel as well. So we got you covered.
Mm-hmm. The full range of show appreciation.
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, she makes a good point. Like, she wanted to get back together at some point. He said no. So, or and maybe she didn't even say that she did. He tried and then she, whatever. They went back and forth.
I mean,
between
but
the
he
two
also,
of them.
It's sort of like, look, you have to, it's a sibling. Like, you can't.
Right.
You can't expect there to be no reaction. So.
Sure.
But he should not push his way into her apartment and berate her. That's not appropriate at any time.
True. Over to the studio, where the real smooth smoothies have brought over contracts and stuff. And Jane enters having no idea who they are and why they're there. And with no patience to humor Sydney about a deal she made without talking to Jane or a lawyer. She's also sketched out by Vincent wanting to look around the studio. And after Jane has stomped out, Sydney tells the guys to ignore her. Vincent goes to get the nylon samples, leaving Jim to ask Sydney out to dinner. And at Chianti, one of Melrose Place's two or three nice restaurants, Jim seems to be trying to pump Sydney for information about how she ended up president at Jane's company, which she flirtatiously deflects. And the next day, Jess finds Joe at a photo shoot and says Jake has been giving him the silent treatment, but he's bracing himself for Jake to explode eventually. But there's nothing Jake can do that will stop Jess wanting to see her. And he's getting ready to go. But first, clip 17.
And just so there's no confusion, I'm never going to give you up. Never going to let you down. Never going to run around and desert you. Never going to make you cry. Never going to say goodbye. Never going to tell a lie and hurt you. Never going to give you up. Never going to let you down.
We've been Jess rolled.
Yeah, he's bad. That song is great.
Mm-hmm.
So
we are also probably bad for playing it, but we regret nothing.
I don't think we're bad. I think we're great. She, Joe, however, looks slightly concerned as Jess leans in, but she kisses him back anyway. So put a pin in that. And then Jane is summoning Sydney to the studio after dark. She had her suspicions about this pantyhose deal, so she opened the box, and what do you know? Underneath all the nylons is heroin.
Mm.
And by the way, the boxes of nylons have price tags on them. Like, they put those on at the store, guys. Like, they don't come from the distributor with the prices on.
Yeah, like, if the whole point of these is that they fell off a truck.
Right. Not how it works. So Sydney is shocked and horrified and swears she didn't know. Jane just wanted to see Sydney's reaction and apparently finding it convincing is calling the cops. But Sydney says she can't. Sydney's still on probation. There has to be a way out of this. And Jane gives Sydney 24 hours to get them out of this deal. Like, how?
Jane.
Bad instincts.
Just shut up, Jane. I'm sorry. Just shut up.
Stop taking business advice from Allison off screen, presumably, because you guys are not doing any friendly things anymore.
No.
And that's it for this episode. Let us close by naming our episode MVP.
Amanda.
Yeah, I hate to do it 2 weeks in a row and repeat myself, but she played this perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Least valuable player. Allison.
I mean, in an episode with what stalkers in various stages of bloom, mm-hmm. Allison still manages to be the biggest fucksuck in the group. Oh, girl.
Yeah.
No. Just no.
Yeah. Also an episode where a guy is cheating on his wife with Matt. Kimberly broke a dude's arm. Like,
mm-hmm.
Even with all that, still Allison.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It's impressive.
She's the most least valuable. That's very unvaluable.
Yep.
Very. Next time on Again With This, it's Hansen versus Hansen, Andrews versus Andrews, Matt versus the oldest married dude line in the fucking book, Allison versus a daddy and his little girl, and Kimberly versus the world. And as always, it's our visual aids versus your corny eye. If you dare, you can find them for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find a link to our very special 90210 book, which is available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And if you want to put us on your payroll, there's tons of extra 90210 and Melrose content at our Patreon page, patreon.com/againwiththis. Join today. We have fun. I'm China White Pair of Control Tops, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Burrito Olive Branch and a question mark, Tara Ariano, and she's at Tara Ariano. And our producer is someone with talent, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Goodbye now.